Friends, before we begin, let me invite you to keep up with all the Tracks for the Journey resources by subscribing to the Tracks Express newsletter. Once a week, I send a wide range of helps for well-being directly to your inbox. The Express has inspiration and insights for spirituality, relationships, ecology, emotional health, and yes, recipes for good food. The easiest way to subscribe is on my website, www.tracksforthejourney.com. Thanks for listening today. As I walked across Jerusalem's Mount of Olives, my eye caught the unusual chapel on the hillside. The white stone building was shaped like a teardrop, pointed at the top and flowing dramatically to the ground. I was looking at the Franciscan church called Dominus Flevit, and from inside the small chapel, you can look through a large arched window to see the eastern wall of Jerusalem and the golden dome of the rock. A beautiful mosaic more than 1,400 years old covers the floor, picturing a hen gathering her chicks. Designed by Antonio Baluzzi, the chapel calls to mind the dramatic moment Jesus stopped on his final journey, looked down on the city, and began to weep in foreboding distress. I'm Larry Payne, the host of Tracks for the Journey, a network dedicated to your spiritual, emotional, and relational well-being. You can find all my resources at www.tracksforthejourney.com. All of us know the emotional moments when tears trail down our cheeks. It's a normal expression of emotion. When the Bible describes Jesus crying, however, questions come. Why would Jesus cry? Today, let's explore the truth of tears for us and for God. Humans are the only animals that cry. Why in the world did we evolve this trait? Sophie Putka quotes scientists that suggest, quote, "The most compelling explanation for tearful crying is that it is driven by our social needs. Crying is a distinct visual signal that something is wrong. In an instant, it communicates that someone might need help. And when others attend to the crier, it contributes to a collaborative social environment that's highly complex in humans," end quote. So think about the last time you cried. You were probably emotional, maybe sad, empathetic, or hurt. Your tears were raising a flag, signaling for others to know and respond with support. We find this story about Jesus in the Gospel of Luke. Luke is not a historical biography as we know it today. It's a theological piece written for those who lived after the Jewish-Roman War of 64 to 72 CE. The Christians were separating from Judaism and under oppression by Rome. And using a variety of sources around 75 CE, the author created a two-volume narrative about Jesus, teaching a universal kingdom that fulfilled the hopes of a Jewish history in a new way. The gospel sought to induce a transforming relationship to God that follows the lifestyle of Jesus in a community of faith and action. As Luke tells the story, Jesus approaches Jerusalem in personal and religious turmoil. The tension had been growing between him, the religious authorities that feared him, and the masses who were following this charismatic teacher. Jesus sensed all this had reached a breaking point. His future and the future of this world hung in the balance. His eyes fill, his shoulders shake, and the sobs vent his anguish. What do his tears mean? Process theology has put aside the classic Greek idea of a God who is perfect and unchanging in all respects, separated from the world in holy bliss. That doesn't square with the Bible's witness of God who is in loving relationship to all things and all people. Theologian Richard Rice wrote, "Identifying God with Jesus ultimately leads to the conclusion that what he experienced in the depths of his anguish was experienced by God himself. The life and death of Jesus supports the idea that God is intimately involved in the creaturely world and experiences it in a dynamic way, aware of, involved in, and deeply sensitive to human events. God's inner life is not static or impassive at all. It surges with powerful emotions, end quote. These tears of Jesus teach us that you and I are not alone in our experiences. God cries along with us, laughs along with us, and hopes with us as our closest companion. In a lonely world, this can mean the difference of carrying on or falling into despair. Haley, a woman struggling with an angry and distant husband, felt she couldn't handle it all. She was overburdened with kids, work, and a sense nothing was going right. She turned to God, renewing a belief long neglected. Her courage and persistence began to grow, and though the struggle with home problems remained, she knew that God was with her, working for good. When the disciples heard the words of Jesus, being steeped in the stories of the Hebrew prophets, they would have thought of Jeremiah. 500 years before, he had cried over the suffering as that very city was destroyed by the Babylonians. He lamented, "Oh, that my head were a spring of water and my eyes a fountain of tears, so that I would weep day and night for the slain of the daughter of my people." Jesus could see something happening that echoed Jeremiah's time. His people were rejecting his teaching and the promise of a new work of God. Jesus had made it clear that a new way of faithful living, not of laws and regulations, but of love and solidarity, was the way. Love God, love your neighbor, seek peace, act for justice. Those were the powerful ways of devotion that could change a heart and a community. Turn away from the anger and the hate and the dreams of an earthly kingdom to join the greatest revolution possible. That was his invitation. But the gospel says the people had turned away from the things that make for peace. Let's imagine for a moment that Jesus is holding a press conference at the airport in your city. He has walked hundreds of miles across your state, talked to thousands, offered a vision of change while facing vicious attacks in the media from faith leaders. As the cameras roll, he begins to cry. What is Jesus crying about now? I think the answer is the same as it was on that ancient hillside. We have failed to listen to the things that make for peace. His tears would be about innocent civilians caught in a brutal war fomented by greed and lust for power. His sobs would reveal the pain of women suffering violence from the undeserved rage that spews from the partner who's afraid of losing control. His anguish would echo the dying cry of a transgendered woman beaten in an African jail. His heavy shoulders would indict my surrender to a rampant materialism that rapes the planet and promotes poverty. Our choices make a difference today, just as in the days of Jesus. In his gospel, Luke put a warning 3 times that something bad was coming. In this moment of truth, Jesus said, "The days will come upon you when your enemies will set up ramparts around you and surround you and hem you in on every side. They will crush you to the ground, you and your children within you, and they will not leave one stone upon the other, because you did not recognize the time of your visitation from God." The Jewish War of 66 through 72 CE started in response to Roman greed, religious persecution, and oppressive fiscal policies. Early victories by Jewish zealots turned to a horrendous loss of life under the vast superiority of the Roman legion. By the time the siege of Jerusalem was over, more than 1 million people were dead, and the great temple was a smoking ruin. As Luke wrote this, he may have known people who died there, or others who survived, scattered and homeless, in a fate that would last for centuries. It's important to note that Jesus does not say the potential calamity was God's punishment. Instead, the destruction would come from the choice of violent resistance, rejecting the practical way of Jesus in right living. God didn't punish the people through this war, but instead had sought through Jesus to offer a better way, moving away from the path of hate and destruction. I believe the same reality is true today. Our choices have consequences. So God is at work drawing us to seek shalom, abundance, and peace. The divine calls us to collaborate with the prodding of our conscience, the good laws of the land, and the voices of prophets raised against injustice. We can listen to the hurting to give out empathy and prayer. We can pray, uniting our energy with God and energizing us to change. The tears of Jesus are a warning and an invitation to lean forward for God's work now. If we will look around, we can see people making choices for good. An Israeli woman, Yael Admi, and a Palestinian woman, Reem Harara, had different faiths but a common goal of peaceful coexistence. They have worked for years mobilizing women in their respective communities to advocate for peace. They led in the Mother's Call Declaration, a joint effort to end the hate and conflict in the Middle East. They were nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, their work growing even stronger as the world saw the uselessness of military actions. "We will no longer take a backseat," they courageously declared. Your tears and mine connect us as human beings in a powerful way. Why was Jesus crying? The tears of Jesus call us to seek His way of life in the modern world. We can join the ongoing work of God for the well-being of our own heart and this world. And so, may your life be filled and alive with all the things that make for peace.